A psychoanalytic consultant is really the enemy of people ignoring the role that the unconscious has in their lives. Just denying that there is, not even knowing that there is an unconscious effect on their rationally selected behavior. And I strongly believe that interferences from the unconscious can be minimized by a consultant, just as we can minimize the irrational's influence on patients in our work with mental illness.
Welcome to the IPA podcast, Psychoanalysis on and off the couch. This is a podcast in which we will discover the world of psychoanalysis that lives beyond the couch, beyond the individual consultation room. We will meet psychoanalysts who work in dialysis units, prenatal clinics, corporate boardrooms, community centers, humanitarian organizations, and with vineyard workers, just to name a few. We hope these conversations expand our awareness of how broadly psychoanalytic thinking extends into our communities. Come listen, enjoy, and please share your comments on the webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org.
Welcome, everyone, to today's podcast. I am Stephen Rolfe, an analyst on the faculty of the Psychoanalytic Center of Philadelphia and chair of the American Psychoanalytic Association's Committee on Corporate and Organizational Consulting. I am an executive coach at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania and managing principal of Rolfe Advisory and Sante Advisory, firms specializing in psychodynamic leadership advisory services for CEOs, business owners, and leaders in crisis. I'm very pleased today to welcome Dr. David Sachs to our podcast. David is clinical professor of mental health sciences emeritus at Hahnemann University and a training and supervisory analyst at the Psychoanalytic Center of Philadelphia. He was chair of the American Psychoanalytic Association's Committee on New Training Facilities from 1976 to 1984, vice president of the IPA from 1995 to 97, and IPA New Training Facilities member and chair from 1993 to 2012. David is one of our pioneers. He has worked off the couch from a relatively early time in his career, and we will hear today about how his interest in business and organizational consulting grew and was deeply influenced by his training and experience as a psychoanalyst. David, welcome. You've had a long and distinguished career practicing psychoanalysis and psychoanalytic psychotherapy. Perhaps we could begin our discussion with understanding how your training and experience prepared you to consult with businesses.
I think I can best begin by saying that I learned the psychoanalytic point of view, which is a radically different way to look at the world. It's different from just looking at the world through conscious and rational ideas. So the psychoanalytic point of view is what is used in corporate consulting and business consulting, and it always includes the unconscious. This makes the analytic consultant a unique individual kind of consultant.
Can you be more specific about some of the skills an analyst uses in treating patients that helped you in consulting with people in the business world?
Yes, the list would be very long, of course, but I can give some sample ideas of some of the things that are important for me. Listening in a special, open-minded way is crucial, and that's what analysts practice in all of their work in doing psychotherapy and psychoanalysis. We listen for hidden messages that are revealed in slips of the tongue, false comparisons, overgeneralizations, and so forth. We're listening for messages from the unconscious, and we're always aware that the past influences the present. We also feel that people are complex, always, and we want to pay attention to their complexity. And for that, we need tact in forming our comments to them and showing that we take their point of view seriously. Empathy is another important characteristic that goes with the psychoanalytic point of view and is used very often in corporate consulting.
I know your views of exactly how to define psychoanalysis have shifted over the years. I'm wondering if you could say something about that and possibly speak about how those shifts in your understanding of analysis have affected you regarding consulting.
It's an interesting question to try to answer because in some ways my views have changed and psychoanalysis has changed along with it. And in some ways, psychoanalysis hasn't changed. In the sense that psychoanalysis hasn't changed is that it's always and still is completely private. It's a dyadic relationship between two people and can't take parts of it out to apply them to something else. For example, you can't take free association out of the psychoanalytic situation and apply it to something else because it applies only within the dyadic relationship that is completely private. On the other hand, psychoanalysis has changed because the body of knowledge is always added to, and psychoanalysis now includes more techniques than it did before, but it still remains a dyadic relationship. At the same time, we have to realize that psychoanalytic knowledge has always been applied to psychoanalytic psychotherapy, and there the methods that are used are multiple. They all can be applied to other situations, like applied to people who need help in corporate situations.
You're speaking about both analysis and psychoanalytic psychotherapy. I wonder if you could elaborate on the difference between an analysis and psychoanalytic psychotherapy as it applies to your consulting to businesses.
Well, yes, I can try to make it a little more clear. Both psychoanalysis and psychoanalytic psychotherapy are based on the body of knowledge. In fact, both derive from the body of knowledge, and that body of knowledge is constantly being enlarged by contributions from psychoanalysis, which is exploring the unconscious, and from psychotherapy, which is using psychoanalytic ideas to have some insight into the unconscious, which also makes a contribution to the body of knowledge. So that makes the techniques of psychoanalytic psychotherapy the ones that are easily applied to people in corporations, whereas it's not possible to take techniques used in psychoanalysis out of context. There's another important point that needs to be mentioned. Psychoanalysis has a different theory of cure than psychoanalytic psychotherapy. For psychoanalysis, the exploration of the body of the patient's unconscious is the way in which the cure occurs. It's actually a byproduct of exploring the unconscious. Whereas in psychotherapy, you have a direct interest in solving the immediate problem that is being presented to you. So the goals of business is very much the same as the goals of a psychoanalytic psychotherapist.
If I could shift gears for a minute, I know that your interest in consulting is longstanding. And I'm wondering if you could speak a bit about how your colleagues initially responded to your interest in applied psychoanalysis.
I'm smiling at that question, Steve, because the answer is so easy to give. They thought it was a terrible thing I was doing. They thought it was wild analysis at the very least, and it was not something that should be done because it more or less betrayed the psychoanalysis and took it out of its central position. So they really were very critical of my efforts to do that.
Unfortunately, David, that response doesn't surprise me in the least. And I'm afraid to say colleagues fairly recently have gotten that kind of response. But things are changing, and this podcast is certainly evidence for that. People are doing remarkable things, applying their psychoanalytic knowledge in all sorts of endeavors. Because there was so much criticism from most of your colleagues about applying psychoanalysis to non-patient subjects, what encouraged you to continue to try to become a business consultant?
Well, it probably wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for serendipity. A chance event was crucial in my recognizing the possibility of doing corporate consulting. I actually hadn't even thought of the idea before, and therefore I wasn't missing out on anything as far as I was concerned. But I happened to reestablish my friendship with a friend in who I went to college with, and we had been not in contact for quite a long time. And when we got back in contact, I guess it was in the late 70s or early 1980s, we began to catch up on what we had both done. And Don had become quite famous. In fact, he was world famous. His name was Don Schoen. And he worked he was a professor at MIT, and he consulted with businesses and was famous for his ability to solve business problems. He also was problem solving at MIT. And I was talking to him about my work. And one of the things I was doing at that time was I was in chair of the Committee on New Training Facilities of the American Psychoanalytic Association. And at that time, there was an interest in increasing the number of institutes and starting new institutes in places where there was little or no possibility of emulating the training that you got in an established institute. So I was working, trying to relate the methods of education that were approved by the Board on Professional Standards and the small group that was trying to begin psychoanalytic training. There were very large differences in what could be done in a small group and what could be done in a large group. So we had to find compromises and invent new methods. One of the compromises was that we altered some of the progression techniques that were used to advance young candidates. And we also created the idea, actually before my time, of geographic rule training analysts, that is, analysts appointed by the Board on Professional Standards rather than by an institute, because there just wasn't anybody to do the appointing. Because of this experience, when the IPA began to look to start institutes where psychoanalysis had been suppressed by authoritarian regimes, they turned to me and put me on their Committee on New Training Facilities, which I ultimately became chair of and worked on for about 12 years. I was doing exactly the same thing with them as I did with the American, but on a global scale. And it was a fascinating and rewarding experience. So this was one of the topics I discussed with Don. And as I made clear to him the kinds of thing I was doing, he said, "Hey, you're a corporate consultant too. That's what you're really doing, only you don't know it." So I kind of laughed and said, "Huh, you've taken the wool off my eyes, and now I think I do have a possibility of thinking about becoming a corporate consultant. The only problem is I don't have any clients." And that's what I was waiting for in the early 1980s.
But you were using your analytic perspective, your analytic understanding to work and to consult in this project for the Center of New Training Facilities. You were certainly fortunate to have Don Schoen as your mentor while you were working with the CNTF and the IPA. Could you give us an example in which you applied psychoanalytic ideas to a corporate consultation?
Yes, I can tell you about my first case. The person was referred to me by a colleague, and he had a very specific problem. He was a semi-retired CEO of a very large corporation. He had replaced himself with a new CEO, we can call him Charles, and thought that he was replacing the himself exactly. And in many respects, he was replacing himself exactly. Charles came from a similar intellectual background. He went to the same schools that Bill went to. He had the same social world, and he even had the same hobbies as Bill had. Bill thought he was hiring a clone of himself. It turned out that Charles was not a clone. He was similar in very many respects, but he was not similar in the sense that he was not an entrepreneur, did not have an entrepreneurial type of personality like Bill did. He couldn't make quick decisions to buy or sell things that were used in this business, large items that cost millions of dollars. And if you missed a chance to act, you missed a chance to make a lot of money. And Charles simply was unable to do that. So Bill would have discussions with him suggesting what he should do, but Charles never did it. And Bill got so angry, he couldn't talk to him anymore. So that was what he was the presenting complaint. And I worked with Bill to try to understand what his blind spot was due to. He just didn't do a complete evaluation of what was needed for his job. And he more or less used wishful thinking to think that he had hired a clone of himself. I know a lot about the issue of misidentifying and being misidentified, because if there's anything an analyst has experience with, it's just that. So I was using my analytic knowledge of separation and individuation to help Bill admit that he made a mistake so that he could come to grips with the fact that this could be a very important decision for him to make, since a lot of money was at stake and he was a major shareholder in the company. Well, it did work, and he began to see that he had to either disassociate from the company completely or come back and take charge. He was so worried about the success of the company that he did go back and take charge, but he was also concerned about hurting the feelings of Charlie. This was not an insuperable problem, so we talked about it. He began to realize that if he offered Charles a sufficient golden parachute, he would be content. Bill wouldn't feel guilty about asking him to leave prematurely, and Bill just took over. When he took over, he immediately saw that there was an important decision to be made, and he made it and actually made a purchase that was worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. So that worked very successfully, and my psychoanalytic knowledge was in play all the time. I think I could also say that because of the work with him, he was in the process of reorganizing the chain of command of the company and asked me to participate in that because he thought that my analytic skills were very useful in creating a organization that had better communication within its subdivisions. I think this was a really lucky and a wonderful experience for me. Throughout it, Don counseled me and gave me help in overcoming my anxieties about stepping into areas that I knew very little about. But when Don told me that all corporate consultants feel that way, I felt a lot better and was ready to move on with that career.
It's really such a wonderful example because it really demonstrates the kind of impact that an analyst can have on an organization, especially when working with the leadership of the organization. You know, I'm reminded that it's a quite frequent problem with search firms that in looking for successors or looking for people to fill positions, the person conducting the search often makes a mistake by attempting to select a person exactly like them rather than somebody who's more suited for the job. Of course, they're not aware of their unconscious in doing that, but apparently it's quite a major problem with search firms.
Yeah, I really appreciate your saying that, Steve, because another aspect of that is that I've noticed in a corporation with which I consulted that the reverse also happens. Sometimes they deselect the ideal person because of competitive feelings with them, and they can't turn it over to anybody else. So their countertransference causes them to miss the ideal person. It's amazing how much psychoanalytic knowledge in this area of projective identification comes in to help us understand what's going on when a new hire is being made.
I was wondering, you know, I've felt that working as a consultant has really changed the way I think about treatment and the way that I practice. Could you speak some about how this experience that you had consulting and your consulting experience in general has influenced your career and your practice as an analyst?
Yes, I think I should just say it was incredibly emancipating to feel that you could apply psychoanalytic ideas outside of the consulting room. It opened your eyes to what's really going on in the world. And I discovered that there were people doing this, and like myself, not advertising it, but they were doing it. Abraham Zeleznik, who was a professor at the Harvard Business School, had been consulting with organizations and with family business problems. And Vamik Volkan was consulting with governments. My experience made me aware of what was going on elsewhere. And I think it was just tremendous.
I'm glad you mentioned Abe Zeleznik. He was such an important early proponent of consulting with businesses. He should certainly be mentioned in connection with these podcasts, as he influenced so many of us consulting to organizations. As I listen to your case discussion and your work with the new groups, I recognize that you're describing a process akin to supervision. And I've often felt that what I do when I speak with CEOs, for example, about how to better manage their direct reports, it's really quite similar to psychoanalytic supervision.
It is. I find the same thing is true. It's similar, and it's a little easier to do supervision with an individual than it is to do supervision in a corporation, because you have so many disparate interests to take into account when you're doing that. So it's not an exact sameness, but you're using many of the same skills. And one of the things that I notice is that in both situations, you have to be aware of transference. The student who's coming to you for supervision idealizes you and thinks you have all the answers. Likewise, the person that you're consulting with in a business is hoping that you're going to have the answers to their problems in a kind of magical way. That we can't do. So a lot of our work has to do with shifting the responsibility for action to the person we're treating or supervising or the person we're consulting with. That's really interesting to bring us back to the point where we are not acting as if we know everything and have secret access to knowledge.
It's interesting to consider the resistance to the concept of applied psychoanalysis, given that we've had psychoanalytic supervision as an example of applied analysis with us from the outset. I think this is the point that Aaron Esmond was driving at in his paper on applied analysis. It was a major contribution that Esmond made by showing how Freud actually worked to develop his methods. He argues persuasively, in my view, that Freud derived much of analytic theory from knowledge that he had from sources off the couch, including art and literature, memoirs like Schreber, Little Hans, where he doesn't even see the patient, Freud's walking through Leiden for an afternoon speaking with Mahler, were all examples of non-clinical derivation of theory. I think it would help to get a more complete feel for your particular application of psychoanalysis, corporate consulting, if you could present a few more brief vignettes of the kinds of problems you have addressed as a consultant.
I have two kinds of examples. I think I can briefly present them. In one, the influence of the consultation was not large, but it was important to a person, a junior executive who is not assertive, and that was why he was referred to me, to help him get out of his office and spread the knowledge of what he was doing to help the company more largely. That was really part of his job, but he didn't like to do it. And so he became increasingly withdrawn from the general flow of activity. This caused him to be sort of alienated. I worked with him to see if I could help him become more assertive, and using really some very basic psychoanalytically inspired views. He just used the time that he was withdrawn to imagine the problems in the corporation as a whole, which was not his job, and which he wanted to present to people who were not interested in his opinions because it wasn't his job, and he withdrew more. So I was able to interpret this vicious cycle that he was involved in. As a result, he decided to assert himself. Well, naturally, he overdid it. He went to a meeting in which he really should be invited, but they didn't know he was coming. And when he showed up, the chair of the committee looked at him and said, "What the hell are you doing here?" Well, this really shattered his attempt at being assertive, and he withdrew back into his office. So the next time I was working with him, he was really very discouraged. And we worked through how to solve this problem so he could be more naturally fit in with the company. And our solution was that he should talk privately with the chair of the committee, work out a compromise with him about giving notice about whether he was coming. And they made peace, and it was very successful. It didn't have a large impact on the company, however. It just had a large impact on my client. So the other example I would like to mention, which had a large influence, I was aware that the business would be what I call a blame culture. Whenever anything went wrong, and believe me, things went wrong often because they made very many products. It was a manufacturing company. I realized that if anything went wrong, they would scapegoat somebody. So I happened to mention to a vice president that I was impressed with this because it didn't make sense to me that there was always somebody to blame. Many of the problems seemed to be caused by a systems error that really wasn't anybody's fault. This idea, popular as it is in general culture, was not something he was aware of. And he really liked the idea because he felt he had scapegoated some people. They had felt unfairly criticized, and they withdrew from active participation in the company. And they also felt no allegiance to the company. It lowered morale all around them. So the result of this casual conversation with us, something I learned in psychoanalysis, that people can incorrectly blame themselves and others for things which are not their fault. And it had a very wide effect on the company.
Yeah, I was going to say that, in this example, you demonstrate that a consultant can make interventions that can change a person in a decisive manner without knowing his deep unconscious motives. In this example, why he has a blame theory of governance. It's clear from what you're saying that you feel analysts are in an excellent position to help individuals in corporations who are blocked or inhibited or somehow unable to achieve their goals, their rationally chosen goals that they've been assigned or that have been assigned to them by the company. And I certainly agree that the psychoanalytic consultant can give people who work in business the opportunity to discover hidden irrational interests that drive them, that prevent them from reaching their goals. I'm sure you would agree.
Yes, I certainly agree. That's an excellent summary of what I was trying to get across. Of course, there's a very wide range of personality types that we deal with, various kinds of mental illness even, but certainly what you said is right to the point. I just wanted to kind of give my summary of what I think are some generalizations I'd like people to take with them about what we do. A psychoanalytic consultant is really the enemy of people ignoring the role that the unconscious has in their lives. Just denying that there is, not even knowing that there is an unconscious effect on their rationally selected behavior. And I strongly believe that interferences from the unconscious can be minimized by a consultant, just as we can minimize the irrational's influence on patients in our work with mental illness. And this makes me constantly aware of the fact that the consequences of helping a person behave more rationally can be more widely spread in corporate consulting, because the individual with whom you consult has a lot of power to influence a lot of people. And the power that an individual in therapy has is just the power of one person. And that is often not very high. So I would just like to end my remarks with quoting Freud: the use of psychoanalysis for the therapy of the neuroses is only one of its applications. The future, perhaps, will show it is not the most important. Those are prescient words from Freud about the future.
I've always loved that quote. And Freud, of course, was prophetic about the future in many respects. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts about our analytic future, as well as the future of applied analysis.
Well, I don't want to claim to have any special skill at predicting the future, but I will make an attempt to say what I think the present state of affairs is. Right now, the analytic institutes are restricting their practice to mental health issues, and that's a very desirable thing to do, but it shortchanges its applicability to business, law, government, and so forth. And I think that psychoanalysis is too rich and vital a basis of knowledge that it's important for humanity that psychoanalysts begin to consult with these organizations who are not patients. I think if that happens, the future is bright for psychoanalysis. But I think if we restrict our practice to a very narrow group of patients, the picture is not very encouraging. So I'm optimistic on the one hand, and on the other hand, pessimistic. I guess that's a typical psychoanalyst.
David, thanks very much. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you for listening. If I may, I'd like to ask you to help us publicize our podcast by rating us on iTunes or simply sharing it with a friend. You can also visit our webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org, where you can both subscribe and also add your comments. I'd also like to acknowledge the lovely rendition of Beethoven's Opus 18th String Quartet by the Allegri String Quartet on the Vivat label.